Blog Talk Radio.
And today is Sunday, July 5th, 2015. And today I'll be interviewing Nick Vanderleek and Lisa Wilson. Nick Vanderleek is a South African freelance writer and photojournalist. And Lisa Wilson is a true crime author and trial blogger. She's also known as Juror 13. And they've written a number of books together, 8 books about Oscar Pistorius, 4 books about Jodi Arias, and 2 books about the murder of Meredith Kircher, also known as the Amanda Knox case. Their 2 books are Deceit and Dark Matter. And they are with us today. Hi, Nick. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Hey, Liz.
So I know we spoke to Lisa last week, and we missed you, Nick. You didn't show up. So hopefully talk more about your background.
Yeah.
We had some technical issues, but I think we've worked them out.
Great, great. So, Nick, how did you get started with true crime writing and the Meredith Kircher murder case?
I guess I've been interested in, I wouldn't say true crime per se, but I've been interested in some of the more sort of controversial cases and basically around the world. So anything that really caught my eye, I would sort of pay attention to. I think one of the first cases that I really paid attention to was David Payne in New Zealand. And you know, the incredible thing with that case was he was also ultimately acquitted. And it was just amazing following that case and finding that, you know, half of New Zealand thought he was innocent. And finding so much information that suggested otherwise. I basically did keep up to date with certain cases that I found interesting. And I'm a journalist I'm a curious person, so I sort of follow anything that really interests me. And occasionally it's true crime. In terms of the Oscar trial, you know, that was someone that I was Facebook friends with, and I wanted to know who she was, and you know, I didn't set out to write the book. I simply just asked myself, you know, who is this person, and you know, questions led to another, and that's really what happened. And when Lisa and my paths crossed, we had a lot in common. We had a similar way of thinking about things, similar analytical mind, and it was pretty amazing how, when we applied our minds, how much information we got, just pretty incredible to us, you know.
Yes, yes. And, you were saying that writing e-books is unique, covering these crime stories. What did you mean by that? Versus writing...
I'll take this one, and then Nick, you can jump in if you want. We talked a little bit about it last week, but the bigger piece of it, I think, that makes it so unique and so special that I didn't mention is that, and this is something, quite honestly, I haven't seen any other authors doing. We provide hyperlinks to all of the references that we utilize, and we utilize everything from videos to news articles to our blogs, other people's blogs, I mean, information across the board on all sides of a case. And it's, in a sense, it's these books are, they're a lot of different things. They provide information about the case. They provide opinions about the case. They provide discussion about the case. But then they also give you the resources. So it's almost like you've got, like, your Bible, like, all wrapped into one. with these books, and people have found that very valuable. A lot of people will say to us, and you can see this in some of the reviews that we get, that it's just it's a very easy way to go to a place and find all of the information that you're looking for. In addition to that, it just it bolsters what we're talking about. You know, we one of the things we want to talk about today is credibility. I'll have Nick talk about that a little bit, but you know, it's sometimes it's difficult when you're getting used to a new author to, you know, especially when you're talking about something that's true crime or something that's actually happening in the world, you know, how do you trust that person? And, you know, we back up our work. And so that's another reason why we provide all of those references so that people can see for themselves and match it up and then ultimately come up to, you know, with their own opinion. So what do you think, Nick?
I think another aspect that's special about ebook is that it's potentially extremely interactive. It's potentially extremely, I'm talking about interactive for the reader who can take their little journey further if they want to. You know, all our information we find somewhere and we show the reader where we find it. And the reader's welcome to go on and, you know, read even more than what we're providing. But, you know, the other thing is just the speed at which we and the flexibility that one has. Sometimes we have a reader who says to us, you know, what you said there isn't 100% true, you know, that aspect, blah, 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 and then, you know, one can actually change it, whereas if it's printed, it's kind of carved in stone. The cool thing with the Oscar trial, we came out with our books before anyone else, you know, even before the verdict was out, and... you know, we some people criticized us and they were like, you know, well, how dare you? You know, this is a court case. How dare you talk about it, think about it? How dare you, I don't know if one wants to say have a judgment, but how dare you? And, you know, we basically say, well, it's actually the opposite. I think we should be thinking about it. And also, you know, it's more brave and it's more, I think, credible when you don't know the result, you don't know the outcome, and you're looking at this evidence and you're saying, well, we're kind of putting our money where our mouth is. This is what this is our position. And it's much easier, obviously, after all the facts, sorry, and after the verdict, to say, well, that's what we thought or whatever it is. So the Oscar trial was quite interesting because we got first stamp basically before anyone else.
Okay. Nick, I'm having a little trouble hearing you, so just to be clear. Well,
I can hear you okay on our end.
Okay. So just so from credibility, so how from there, where do you... Yeah, I know, because you also spoke about, and you mentioned this about the Oscar Pistorius case and media and how... the presentation of the case, you know, basically saying how, you know, an acquittal is worth millions of dollars. Would you mind going into that a little bit with that case and with the, you know, Meredith Kircher case?
I don't know if I totally understand that question, Liz. Can you say that one more time?
Sorry. I was talking about, you know, the credibility in the media and what sources to trust and, I remember Nick wrote an article. You wrote an article that's just published today in True Justice Meredith Kircher website, and where you mentioned about how the media didn't want to portray Oscar Pistorius as guilty because then they wouldn't be able to profit from that.
Mm-hmm. And so do you want him to answer in terms of the Meredith Kircher case, how that applies?
Right, like if he sees a similarity between the two cases with that, in respect to that, yes.
Yeah. Did you catch that, Nick? Or basically, what is the media obviously has a stake, they have a financial stake in what it is that they're reporting. We saw in the Oscar Pistorius case, you know, great manipulation in what they were reporting because of their own, you know, their own agendas. How is that relevant in this case? What kind of agendas have you seen in the media with the Meredith Kircher case?
Me.
You. This is you. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I guess the huge agenda, the sort of elephant in the room is the, you know, the Marriott PR machine. And It seems to be very real. Like we've written about Oscar, we've written about Jodi Arias, and the amount of vitriol, the amount of personal attacks, the amount of character assassination, the volume of it, the diversity of it is pretty impressive, actually. If you take an Oscar Pistorius also had PR in the beginning. I don't think he has it anymore. Jodi Arias also has her sort of minions doing their thing online, but the scale of it with Amanda Knox is pretty impressive. You can actually feel that there's a lot of money flowing around, in a sort of subterranean way. You can't actually see it, but you do sense an incredible commitment from all sorts of people. It's always the same names that come up, and they are to do the same thing, and that's what I find very interesting is they never want to discuss the case, they want to discuss how whatever you've done that's dishonest or questionable. They want to talk about your credibility, and that's really what they want to talk about. They don't seem interested in really discussing the case or discussing Amanda Knox. I actually wrote a blog post today, I think, where I basically just said credibility is quite an important thing to discuss. Let's discuss our credibility, but then the person who's asking us, we also need to know who you are, what's your job, where are you, who are you, get away from your little avatar. Let's have an honest conversation about who we are, what we represent, what our motives are, both ways. Yeah, I'm a writer. I do this for a living, and we care about our stories. Between Lisa and I think we've got 29 books on Amazon, and they're selling. They sell every single day, and our credibility is not based on. We don't have a PR machine behind us. Our credibility is based on people who read what we write, and they obviously get some value out of it that they keep reading. We care about what we write about as well, and we also care about credibility. We care about the accuracy of our information. We care about standards. So yeah, that's really where we come in. But credibility is a very slippery thing. If you look at Amanda Knox, first she's found guilty, then innocent, convicted and acquitted. So that's another thing. Credibility isn't a constant; it changes. But a lot of credibility is literally based on hearsay. It's literally based on what people believe. And people need to be a lot more careful. They need to be careful, who they listen to, and what standards they apply to credibility, because it is an important thing.
Well, and I just wanted to jump in real quick and say too, you have to give people an opportunity before you judge their credibility. And I think that's what's so amazing to me is that literally without even reading our books, without knowing us, without even trying to have an honest conversation with us, there's been an awful lot of people who have immediately jumped online and called us really terrible names. It makes no sense. I mean, honestly, we love nothing more than somebody coming to us and saying, hey, let's talk about this, even when it's a totally different opinion. Those are great conversations. I just really am perplexed as why people can't do that in this case. Instantly, we are evil people for wanting to tell a different side of the story. And that to me just tells me that they have a very deep-rooted agenda that has nothing to do with just talking about a case. Obviously, there's something else going on there.
Thank you. Yes. And also, I forgot what I was going to go to my next question with that. Oh, yes, your experience now. How is it different with this type of PR activity from Oscar Pistorius to the Amanda Knox case? Because Nick mentioned that he felt, I forget exactly the phrase he said, but something like Jodi Arias. He said Jodi Arias trolls were like chattering chipmunks and compared to the ogres in the Meredith Kircher case. I was wondering if how the level of this type of attacks is different from book to book that you've written.
Well, some of the accusations are pretty serious to the extent that, we've literally had a draft. We've actually had to call up some people and send them, by courier, letters from lawyers. And, it's not something we like to do, but certainly, the impression we kind of get is people get so used to insulting people and making accusations and calling them names that they actually forget that, we exist in a real world. We are real people, and so are they. And, you kind of would step back a little bit and say, well, if you were sitting across from me right now in my living room, would you be saying that sort of thing, having never met me as well? And you might say, well, yes. Then you have a case to answer for. You're welcome to make these statements, but then you may also have to defend them in court. And it's the exact same thing with Amanda Knox and her family, and I think even solicitor. They've been extremely they've been extremely communicative. They've said a lot, and as a result, a lot of what they've said, they actually have to defend in court. They've made a lot of accusations against the police. They've written them down in books, and if you're going to do that kind of thing, what I don't understand is, people like Oscar, also Jodi Arias, also Amanda Knox, but probably Oscar least of all. But even so, all of these people really. They've said a lot, and every time you say something, one can basically take that and say, well, previously you said that, now you're saying that, and check it out, like, okay, so he just didn't just find court, and he was acquitted, and kind of game over. There's no big story to tell there, but you get someone like Jodi Arias who testified 18 days, you get a guy like Oscar who's on the stand for 5 days, Amanda Knox writing a book, accused, also writing a book. It's crazy. They made a lot of money, but ultimately, where there's smoke, there's fire, and you're giving people kindling, But something I want to just touch on that I think is pretty important is, There's all this, even this discussion we're having, it's not really the discussion we want to have. We don't want to be talking about trolls. We don't want to be talking about bad reviews or anything like that. What we want to talk about is what happened on the first job. We want to talk about the case. That is what matters. And the thing that kind of upsets me about the, even the supporters of Meredith Kutcher, but also the supporters of Amanda Knox, is it becomes this constant tennis match of, well, this, that, whatever. But no one seems to really get back to the bottom line. What happened on November 1st? And then also, have a proper conversation where you say, well, what's your version? If you take everything that all your information. Mm-hmm. Build your version, and then that's your version, and then let's look at another version and say which one is more credible. And one thing I've done, in Deceit is I invited the readers. We gave a scenario, and we invited our readers to say, well, which parts do you think we can improve on? Because this is what you want to do. We want to absolutely nail down second by second exactly what happened, what was likely to have happened, and the more minds we can sort of use as a resource, the better. Mm-hmm. We can ask Lisa. So far in all our narratives, we write a narrative, we piece it all together. But at the end, what we're trying to do is sort of honor reality. We want to say what happened. We want to find out what really happened. Even in a court case, all of that seems to get lost in a lot of allegations or whatever. Why is all this happening? Why are we even talking about it? What happened on that day? That's what we really want to solve.
I know. That's what it comes down to. And we've definitely received some criticism for having a what people consider like this, drama-filled fictionalized account of what happened that day. That to me, I actually don't understand, because with any one of these cases that we've ever heard about, especially cases that are really just off the wall like this, the young girl gets killed by being stabbed in the neck, and it's just a really crazy murder. haven't every one of us at some point in our own moments just sat down and thought about that day? Like, you know, envisioned in your mind what actually happened that day? I would be really shocked if people hadn't. So I don't really see why it's such a big deal to try to piece together and put it in a book what we think happened. You know, I think that's actually a very common thing to do in these types of cases. So, and we do want people to chime in and tell us what they think, and together we can kind of come up with a scenario that fits the evidence.
That's the other thing with the ebook is we're basically saying, you know, we're probably going to be writing quite a few books. The next one is Under Suspicion, but there are going to be a bunch of books coming along. And if people have read Dark Matter, you'll see there are a couple of new thoughts that we've had that take that scenario on November the 1st slightly further. And, you know, by the third book, there'll be more. And, I mean, these are our insights. And, you know, there are a lot of people that have maybe been studying this case a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to hear what they think. But at the end of the day, we wanna build something at the end that's going to be, if not watertight, then extremely credible. And, and the idea is to put that in place, so, because as far as we can say, it's not really in place. And, you know, we've done that with Oscar Carl. We also did that with Jodi Arias. And, you know, the value of that is, You're literally reimagining something in the absolute finest detail, and the only way you can credibly reimagine something like that is to really, really understand these people,
yeah,
understand the situations they're in, understand the patterns, and then everything needs to line up. You know, if you're putting these pieces together and one piece doesn't fit together properly, you don't force it in. That's when you ask questions. You say, well, jeepers, this piece doesn't fit, you know, what are we going to do? And it's often that piece that doesn't fit that leads to all sorts of new questions,
yeah,
new avenues, new insights, and the whole actually ends up being sort of crystallized in even more clarity. So that's really what we're trying to do.
Yeah. And just to jump in real quick, I was just going to mention that Dark Matter, for people who aren't familiar with what it covers, because each of these books is going to cover just a piece of this whole story. Dark Matter really focuses on the day that Meredith was found and then the couple of days after that. And it's just going step by step. So I found this one really interesting, not as a writer, but actually as a reader of this book. I found it really interesting to look at those initial couple of days and everything that was going on, not just with Amanda and Raffaele, but everybody else that was involved in this whole scenario. It's pretty eye-opening.
Yes. So we have a few minutes left. For in Deceit, you had, 28 red flags that you covered? And
yeah.
And then in Dark Matter, you changed them to asterisks, right? You found more. And you had, 102,
yeah,
you said? Or?
Yeah, there was a lot of them. Just basically, we really wanted to emphasize those particular moments as important things to pay attention to.
And now the next book, you're working on your next one now?
Yes, Under Suspicion is the next one.
Under Suspicion, wonderful. And now in that one, are you, how is the next one, is that going? You said the Dark Matter is the day of the murder and the day after, you said? So that the next book, does that cover?
There are the days leading up to Amanda's and Raffaele's arrest.
And so now, Under Suspicion, what is that going to cover?
Under Suspicion is basically going to start from the moment that they're arrested and then what happens beyond that. As far as how many days that goes in, I think that's something we'll determine as we write it.
Well, I think the narrative for Under Suspicion will basically be, as Lisa says, from the moment they're arrested to that first court case, and I imagine we'll have to see how the writing goes, but I imagine it would encompass, you know, until the conviction, the first conviction. So we first need to study, you know, the size that this narrative would be. If it's really going to be a very big narrative, we might cut it in two. One of the things that was different with this case compared to the others for me when I came to this case was the size of it. You know, I was honestly, to some extent, quite intimidated. You know, you've got three suspects, you've got multiple court cases. It's just an enormous case. And then you've also got the something Lisa and I spoke about very quickly before before this interview. You know, the allegations of drug use, it brings about a bit of a fog, which is quite difficult to penetrate as a writer. It's difficult to know what the exact impact of it is. That's still something that we've got to wrap our heads around. That's still kind of a mystery area we need to sort of try and nail down further than we have.
Yes, it is a very, you know, complex case, and it's surprising how well you two have covered it, considering you just only started writing about it a few months ago, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I think in some ways that's what makes it so, like, kind of unique and fresh, is that we are, you know, it's not something that we learned 5 years ago and now we're talking about it. I mean, it's fresh in our minds. We're talking about it as we're doing the research, as it's unfolding. You know, from my take, you know, I'm looking at it as a juror. Nick is looking at it as a journalist. We're also both looking at it as just citizens, you know, wanting to understand what happened and what happened, not just between these people, but what happened in a courtroom. And it's almost like having a water cooler conversation, but just more informed. You know, it's like just sitting around talking to people about what you think about something. And I think that's makes it appealing.
Google is incredibly powerful. I mean, literally with Google, you can basically ask a question. And, Google's going to bring you very close to what you know. And often it, you know, it opens up other questions. Just today, I'm not sure if you saw our little discussion, but just today, we were alerted to a note that was just put up, possibly by Amanda Knox, a very mysterious note that, you know, talks about an advert for a new roommate. And then a phone number is posted, which is the date of the murder. And it's just very odd, like, who on earth would put the area code of Perugia as a phone number, the date of the murder, and then it's just very, very strange. And so that's something that we probably going to kick under suspicion off, is, you know, the credibility of this note. Did Amanda write it? If not, who did? If she did write it, you know, was there some message in it? Because who on earth would put up a note with a phone number that doesn't exist, you know, advertising for someone to rent. A place, and the number they're giving is kind of associated with a date. It doesn't really make any sense unless it's some kind of message. So I'm just saying, that's the other part, is there are a lot of people who have paid so much attention to this case. There are people on forums, there are people who just, you know, maybe close to Meredith or their family and were studied it and cared about it, and they've also got a lot of information that they wonder about, and all of that is another little brick, in the thing that we're constructing. So.
Okay. So we have about a minute left. I want everyone to know that they can get Deceit and Dark Matter on Amazon, and next book, Under Suspicion. When do you think you'll be releasing the Under Suspicion book? Anytime soon?
I would say, you know, probably within like a 4 to 6 week period. But we'll keep everybody updated on our social media. Nick's social media, his Twitter account, if you want to check it out, is @HighResLife. That's HIREZLIFE. And mine is at Lisa W, LISAWJ13. So if you want to check out those accounts, we do regularly update our readers with what's happening with the book.
And unfortunately, we don't have any phone calls. Sorry about that. I guess no one was interested in talking to you today.
Unfortunately, exactly, yeah. I'm sure people will find us and let us know what they're thinking.
I'm sure they will. Well, thank you very much for being on. And good luck with
your
next book.
Thanks very much, Liz. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, well, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.